Today, we've got the incredible Dr. Dolores Fernandez back on the podcast, and it's such a great conversation. Everyone is going to learn so much about their vulvas, their vaginas, and so many of the conditions that you might be experiencing, but your doctor just can't seem to diagnose.
And Mikkel, this is a very personal one for you, if I'm not mistaken.
It is, because I went through something, and it went on for far too long, where I was waking up in the night with burning and itching down there that was brutal. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't think. I couldn't function.
No, and this went on for like a long time, right?
Let's just say that the luckily that phase went on, it went on for too long, but I think it was a couple of weeks, which
an
was like 20 years. But I saw multiple people and they kept saying, well, you don't have a yeast infection and you don't have a UTI. And I was like, what do you mean? Wait, okay, but there's
something is wrong. Like something is wrong. Well, and thankfully have never gone through that. I can't even imagine. But this is why these conversations are so important. And like, how many women are walking around with itchy, burning vulvas and vaginas, and they're going to their doctor and they're just not getting the help. They're getting dismissed. They're not getting the help they deserve and that they desperately need.
Well, and maybe their doctors just don't know. No shade on doctors. Like,
no, of course.
How you're navigating all of this is I'm not sure about either from a medical, you know, professional perspective.
Yeah, how do you know
but
everything?
But also, I would say there's probably a lot of women who are going through this and they're too ashamed to bring it up. So they haven't. Mm-hmm, and they're just dealing, and it's not something you should need to deal with ever.
No. Well, Dr. Dolores is definitely the right woman to have on task today. She kind of knows everything. She's been specializing in this for years.
Yes. So she's a naturopathic doctor, a menopause certified or a menopause society certified practitioner, excuse me, and is the founder of IRIS, which is clean science-backed vulvar and vagina care. And she developed an interest in this because she kept seeing patients who had gone to a medical provider who were struggling, couldn't find answers. And so she decided to go down this rabbit hole and has become an expert.
Well, it's going to be awesome. Everything's on the table in this conversation because this is perimenopause. And so let's get into it.
Hi there, Vulva speaking. We need to talk. For years now, you've been calling me the wrong name. I'm the vulva, not the vagina. I'm all the external bits you can see. My neighbor, the vagina, she's the internal tunnel connecting me to your uterus. You know, the baby highway. Different parts, different names. It's pretty hard to address dry, uncomfortable situations when you don't even know which one of us needs the attention. Now that we're properly introduced, can you please hook me up with some Iris? Their water-based moisturizer and lube are exactly what I need. No irritating fragrances, just clean ingredients to keep me happy and well hydrated, not dry and disgruntled. Eternally grateful for the hydration and finally getting my name right. Signing off, XOXO, your vulva.
And now that you've been properly introduced, do your girls a favor and use code TIP20 for 20% off at lovemyiris.com. That's TIP20 at lovemyiris.com.
Hi.
Thanks for having me here.
We'll always have you here whenever you can fit squeeze us into your crazy schedule. We're going to talk today about something near and dear to our hearts here at This Is Perimenopause, which is vulvar and vaginal health, because it is not properly understood. Most women don't know anything about that part of their body, and so many things can happen especially during perimenopause and any time of hormonal change, and some things are quite serious if they're not addressed. So we wanted to chat a little bit with you about your practice, why this is also an area of passion, if I may, for you, and then have you talk with us about some of the common things you see in your practice and what can be done about them and why it's important to do something about them.
Love it. I think that it's been pretty well talked about that women's health is not heavily funded and studied, let alone vulvovaginal conditions, right? And yep. It sucks because in a way, even being a practitioner, it's not always easy to come up with a treatment plan because we don't always have great evidence to follow. Mm-hmm. And as you're trying to be an evidence-based practitioner, you have limitations because sometimes the studies are just not done. And mm-hmm. so, but you still need to help that person in front of you, right? Yeah. And so yeah. My clinical focus or like subclinical focus really in vulvovaginal conditions kind of came to me. I had a very menopause-focused practice. Yeah. And I was so intrigued by the like vulvovaginal piece to it because I grew up in a household and I know that I'm super privileged to have this experience, but I grew up in a household where we talked about vaginas and vulvas, like
amazing,
just like we did anything else. And so for me, I thought it was so interesting that like people were having such a hard time talking to me about this change that I thought was just like the same as saying, you know, my elbow's hurting, right? And so right. I was fascinated and I was trying to normalize these conversations. And as this was happening, I got more interested in the research and people in my clinic started walking in with new conditions that I didn't really know too much about. And so it really just brought me into a rabbit hole of learning and really just to support my patients because that's the support they needed. And then a lot of great doctors out there, but really didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't an infection, it kind of was getting kind of put off as like, it's in your head because I don't see anything. Swabs are coming back normal. And I believed my patients. And so I just wanted to learn more. And that's kind of brought in more people. And then, you know, that kind of guides the courses I take for my own continuing education. And so, yeah, that's kind of just how my clinical focus has evolved.
Amazing. Amazing. So thank you for doing that because that's another common thing with the experts we have on the podcast and that we work with in this space is them taking on a significant amount of education themselves to learn about what can happen in perimenopause and their expertise really evolving and becoming what it is because of their clinical practice, right? So what you said about women coming in, they've been told there's nothing wrong, but there's something wrong because they're uncomfortable and in pain and things just aren't right. And then you going down the rabbit hole to figure it out and then being able to apply that knowledge to other women as appropriate. So thank you, because it's not, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It is. And obviously super rewarding, right?
I can't even imagine when you've helped someone. I mean, having experienced some episodes of burning vulva that like I couldn't sleep. It was that atrocious. And when the relief finally came, words cannot describe.
I believe it. It literally affects every part of your life. Like yeah. your ability to sleep, function, think, your relationship, everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awful. You where.
It's awful. So yeah. Should we get into some of the common things you see in your practice, particularly for women who are in the perimenopausal stage and, yeah. You know, maybe not quite attuned to the fact that their hormones are going crazy and yeah. what that can and what that can cause. And that is not just hormones, obviously, but that yeah. certainly has a big role in a lot of these things.
Definitely. I would so I would say that in if we're talking specifically perimenopause, menopause, when I was learning about GSM, the genitourinary syndrome of menopause, I was taught that it typically happens later in the menopause transition mm-hmm. and that it's something that, you know, might show up 10, 15 years after that last period. Mm-hmm. And I would say that like that might be farthest from the truth because I see people before they've lost their last period definitely experience vaginal changes. And so I would say in like that realm, maybe that's the most common I see is probably like that GSM piece, mm-hmm. which is pretty well known and pretty well researched for treatment yeah. options for these patients.
Yeah.
But then there could be other things happening at the same time. There can be muscular pieces. There can be skin. And so, I mean, I don't just see people in menopause anymore. I see for vulvar conditions or vulvovaginal conditions. I kind of see everybody because there really isn't too many people who maybe even know all of the potential diagnoses that can
come up. And the risk there, I would imagine, is that things get misdiagnosed.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. And so usually when somebody comes in to see me, the way that the visit is laid out, and I must say that I have the beautiful,
That's okay.
I have the beautiful privilege of time with my patients. Yes. Right? And I will never, like, it's the best piece of my job because this specific focus would be really hard without that time. The first thing we do is like a super long history because most of the time I'm not the first person they're seeing for this. It's just the way that healthcare is in Ontario. That's just not typically a naturopath. There's not the first person I go to.
Right.
And so that history will tell me so much because it'll tell me what they've done. It'll tell me what's worked, what's helped, what's made it worse. And sometimes that information actually helps guide me, my investigation, figuring out what's going on.
How long is that appointment, just out of curiosity?
So if it's a vulvovaginal, I usually will block off about 75 minutes.
Wow.
Like we are grabbing, and usually I've also collected information from them before the appointment too. So I have them send in anything that's been done, and I've had a chance to like look over everything. This way I'm coming in prepared too.
Yeah.
And, you know, when did it start? All of the history, any family history, any medications you're on, all that. And then we will do a physical exam. And that tells me a lot too. But what I will add is that often on physical exam, everything looks normal. Right. And that's because if usually it's a super obvious thing, somebody else has caught it.
Right.
So I did some extra training in pelvic floor physiotherapy because in Ontario, naturopathic doctors are allowed to do manual insertion. So I can do a bit of an assessment with that too. If I want to do any swabs, we can do swabs at that point. But usually, usually it's more to like talk about where the pain is located. And so I kind of, based on talking to the person, and oftentimes these patients come in so well informed. They have notes on everything they've been through. And oftentimes they don't, like I can ask them a question and they know right away. And so
can they name all the parts of their vulva? Sorry to interrupt.
Not great at that. And
I'm curious how many patients actually are well-versed. Probably not very many, right?
Not very many.
And that's no shade on anyone. That's just, that's part of our societal, you know, shaming of the vulva. Anyway,
I'm lucky that I can do that. Like I take my time with the physical exam and say like, and I can point, but if you have 5 minutes and you can't be specific where the pain is, it's really hard for the practitioner.
Yeah.
So then I'm thinking about like location. Is it really deep, the pain, or is it kind of like right at the vestibule, like right on insertion, let's say? And all these things are guiding me on what I think is going on. And this was not mine. It was taught to me and it was like one of the most useful things, but was putting these patients in one of four buckets. The first bucket being hormonal. So that's kind of like the hormones we talked about, perimenopause, postpartum. If it's because of a side effect of something hormonal like birth control or medications that are blocking estrogen. So that's my first bucket. Second bucket is muscular. So we're thinking of the pelvic floor. When the pelvic floor muscles are really tight, they can block blood supply, which can cause a burning feeling, which might not feel like it's muscular, but it can. And that's usually where my pelvic floor physios will come in. My third bucket is nerve related. So that can be, if somebody's had a lot of chronic yeast infections, let's say, it can actually affect the sensitivity of the nerves, like later, even if you've cleared the infection, the nerve sensitivity can be, it's just very heightened, and then anything insertion will hurt.
There's ongoing forever, or then they come and you have a solution for
them?
We
can kind of do like nerve sensitivity training with some things, but sometimes it needs surgery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's also a small group of people that are born with too many nerves inside of the vestibule. And
really,
like, we would see really like a lot of pain from infancy.
Wow.
The things we take for granted.
Yeah. Right? And so the solution for that one is surgery to actually remove some of those nerves.
Wow.
That one, like nerve stuff is not as common. Sometimes we see nerve damage, people who have like been in accidents and hurt parts of their spine that might have like specifically hit the branch that goes to the vestibule, let's say. And then the fourth bucket is inflammatory. And inflammatory, we're thinking like inflammatory skin conditions, like autoimmune skin conditions like lichen sclerosis, maybe psoriasis. I see vulvar dermatitis. And then the second thing being infections. Those are the two inflammatory buckets. So as I'm talking to them, grabbing this history, doing the physical exam, learning about them, I'm starting to like place together which bucket I think they might be in.
Right. Right. And it is wild to me that okay, four buckets, fine, but what can be going on within those buckets? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so people will come to me and on their intake form, they'll write vulvodynia, painful vulva. And right. I'm just like, that literally tells me nothing.
Yeah.
When somebody comes in and is like, I'm a type 2 diabetic, we have a whole roadmap of like, you're going to do this first, then you're going to do this. And if that doesn't work, we'll move to this. But with this, it's like, we really have treatment options, but you have to know where you fall in order to pick the right treatment. And so if we don't have the time to really like learn about the person and do the physical exams, then how can we figure out which treatment plan to give them?
Mm-hmm. Well, right? Like how many women are wandering around with burning, painful, itching vaginas because they haven't had an opportunity to have a lengthy discussion with someone with the level of expertise that you have? Like
in Ontario, I mean, I can only speak on my experience, but I have a very limited scope with what I can prescribe. So I might be the first one to find the lichen sclerosis, mm-hmm. but I can't actually prescribe the treatment for it.
So then what?
And so, yeah. So then what you,
And so that's a challenge. I'm thankful that I've found practitioners now who I can work with, and refer my patients to specifically them so that I know that we kind of have a little bit more of a trained eye together. But sometimes, especially at the beginning, this was resulting in a lot of butterheads, and I'm asking somebody to do something with their license that I can't do that maybe they don't see.
Right.
Which was a challenge.
Especially because I know from my experience with a vulvar condition, sometimes the treatments are if you don't know about this condition and why the treatment is necessary, a well-trained provider without that knowledge would say this is inappropriate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when I would try to, and I would argue that a big piece of my job is helping to figure it out for sure, but also helping advocate for my patient to their practitioner, to give them the tools, to give them the words, to give them the knowledge so that they can show up to their appointment and advocate for themselves. But I'm also writing letters and, you know, trying to push for the right treatment too. And sometimes it's really challenging and we get a lot of pushback, and other times it's been great and we have collaborative care. But it's hard because, you know, people have come in and they've already tried a lot of things. They feel like this is never going to get better. And I mean, that also contributes to the anxiety loop of all of this, right?
Of course.
And then you have two of your practitioners who you value.
Trust.
Saying completely opposite things.
Yeah, that's got to be really challenging and very confusing. We're already confused and overwhelmed and don't understand a lot of this stuff. I could see that I would be like, I don't know. Who do I trust?
Totally, totally. Mm-hmm. So I'll share a patient story. I once had a patient who, I might have been like the fifth practitioner she had seen. She had drove from quite far for a physical exam. I did the physical exam and I was pretty confident that it was lichen sclerosis. Lichen sclerosis can be diagnosed clinically, meaning like I can look at it and you can give the diagnosis based on a physical exam. So I was pretty confident. I had seen enough of lichen to feel confident that that's what was going on. I wrote a letter to her doctor and I said, you know, I did the physical exam. I think this is what's going on. If you don't feel confident or comfortable with that, we can also do a skin biopsy. I talked to the patient about it. I like what that looks like just to confirm it. Maybe that would make the doctor feel better about writing the prescription. anyways, with like a lot of back and forth phone calls, he finally agreed to do it. And we were pumped. We're like really excited, like finally try something she hasn't tried. It looked like this was, I was hoping this was all going to work out. And then she got to the pharmacy and the pharmacist wouldn't fill it and called the family doctor and said, you know, these are ultra potent steroids. They definitely should not be used on sensitive tissue. And then understandably the medical doctor, because he kind of just did
got nervous. Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, okay, don't do that. And anyways, all of this to say, then the patient didn't get an opportunity to try our gold standard treatment for lichen sclerosis. And just an example of the barriers, sometimes barriers to finding the practitioner, but then also barriers to getting the treatment that person
that you need. I do want to know, dive down into what lichen sclerosis is, but how long was this process for this and what ended up happening for this patient?
So she was like in the outskirts of the city. So I ended up getting her or asking her GP to get a referral to a vulvar clinic in the city. So I was like, I think we're confident that this is lichen sclerosis. And if I don't really want to like jump around trying to get the prescription you need, so let's just get you in the right place.
And
she got it. Yeah, it was a long wait. Oh. The wait times are long to get in just because there's only so few people seeing like with a specialty in vulvar conditions. But she got in and she got her treatment and it was lichen sclerosis and now she's doing great. And we do other things to support her, or I do other things to support her with her diagnosis alongside her steroid treatment. And it all worked out. It just sucks because, you know, some people might give up there, or some people might not end up in my office with somebody. Mm-hmm.
Or how long did it take this patient of yours to get treatment for this?
Yeah.
Is it painful?
Years.
And is it painful? Like in sclerosis?
Yeah, it's quite uncomfortable and itchy, and the skin will tear really easily. So you get a lot of discomfort and burning. Sleep gets impacted because you're so itchy and it happens to be more itchy at night.
So maybe we touched on GSM. Let's talk about lichen sclerosis, and then maybe you can tell us about some of the other common things that our peeps need to be looking out for and not putting up with.
Yeah. So with GSM, that is, I don't want to say easy, but our treatment is pretty like straightforward now. The gold standard is like a local vaginal estrogen, and that comes in lots of different forms, whether it's going to be a cream, a tablet, a ring, lots of different options for treatment.
And quickly, GSM, what are the symptoms if people don't know what that is?
GSM is the genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And so it's the vulvovaginal and urinary symptoms or changes that happen because of the loss of estrogen. And that might look like dryness, itching, pain with sex, pain with urination, increased risk of UTIs. Then you might actually see physical changes. You might see some like hypopigmentation. You might see some labial reabsorption, or like the smaller internal labia is kind of like getting smaller. And some people don't, like not everybody comes in being like, I have vaginal dryness. They're just like, yeah, it's different. It's like people can't always pinpoint it. Not everybody is sexually active. So not everybody's coming in saying painful sex. And so, but it is quite common. It's like 87% of postmenopausal people are going to experience it. I think 100% at some point in time will experience it. That's my personal clinical opinion. But we have lots of treatment options.
Mm-hmm. Including it won't go away on its own. So.
And it needs to be treated away on its own. Yes, yeah, it needs to be treated. Exactly.
Yeah. And can get really bad as well.
Like, and will get worse over time if it's not treated. It's I often tell people, like, you know, the hot flashes will eventually get better. Eventually, that might be 10, 15 years, but it will eventually get better. The vaginal changes, vulvovaginal urinary changes will just progressively get worse if not treated. And so we have lots of treatment options. We have moisturizers, we have vaginal hormones, whether that be estrogen. I would say most people probably start with estrogen, but we also now have approved DHEA that can be used, which the DHEA gets to turn into both estrogen and testosterone. Some people need more of a testosterone support in the area. There are both estrogen and testosterone receptors in the vagina. And so sometimes we got to support both. And I would say most of the time that gets rid of it. Whereas some of these vulvar skin conditions, like lichen sclerosis, lichen planus, I see a lot of vulvar psoriasis and a lot of vulvar dermatitis, so like even eczema. And we don't treat it any different than if it was anywhere else on your body. We always say skin is skin. We just, people feel it's different because of where it is. But it doesn't really get treated differently, at least not from my perspective of when I treat this. I also see recurrent UTIs often, and a lot of times those are fixed with estrogen. Sometimes we can do cranberry and supplements to support them in a preventative way, but a lot of times it is those hormonal changes that will impact it, because it's that's why they actually changed the name of GSM. It used to be called vaginal atrophy, but that didn't, and we didn't love that term, but also it didn't include the urinary changes that happen because of the loss of hormones. And so those are things I see. I see a lot of recurrent yeast infections, recurrent BV.
What is BV?
Bacterial vaginosis.
And what is that?
Bacterial vaginosis is interesting because it's not actually a infectious bacteria. It's more of a dysbiosis or unbalancing of the quote unquote good and bad bacteria. We want more of certain bacteria and we want less of others. It's normal to have them all there. But then as soon as that balance kind of like tips to be more favorable with the quote unquote bad guys, because they're supposed to be there, they're just only supposed to be at a certain level. As soon as we see that tip, people will get symptoms. And so we might see gray or green discharge or smelly discharge, itching. And then even sometimes you'll see the actual vaginal tissue really inflamed and red.
But what like, do you do for that?
So usually BV is a quick antibiotic, like a metronidazole will get rid of it. But I see those, but honestly not that much because, again, those are obvious.
Something that your practitioner has seen, is comfortable with. Yeah. Right. And is that like a topical antibiotic or an oral antibiotic?
They will often do either an oral, like usually more often an oral for BV, and then a yeast infection is more an antifungal, and those ones can be oral or a suppository. And then sometimes then what can happen is if the vaginal flora starts getting a little bit, like it stays tipped like that, we just see more infection. So we might see more yeast. And that's why after somebody goes on, let's say, antibiotics for strep throat, unfortunately, we don't get to pick where that antibiotic kills things. It kills them where you're infected, but also maybe in the gut and maybe also in the vaginal canal. And then that might be the thing that tips it over and you might get a yeast infection because of it. Yeast has the opportunity to overgrow. The hard part about treating vaginal infections is that a lot of that bacteria is supposed to be there. It just needs to stay in this beautiful, like the ecosystem is made to thrive. And as soon as something throws it off, you can see infection, which is what happens in people who use products that are not considering that. Things that might throw off the pH or might feed some of that bacteria, then you might throw them off and then increase risk for infection.
Right, which is why you created Iris products.
Which is why we created them, because I was looking at all this in my clinical practice with my patients and I'm like, yeah, no, you can't use this lube because every time you use it, you get a yeast infection because it's the pH is too high or because of the glycerin in it. And I don't ever like to villainize any ingredients, but for some people who are more sensitive, those ingredients do make a difference. There's people who can use these things and have no issues for sure, but that's just not who is walking into my office.
So for UTIs, recurring UTIs, vaginal estrogen is the gold standard. For someone who's getting recurring yeast infections, is there a gold standard
to
fix that?
So no, probably not. We have certain medications that are in the azole group that we'll try. And there's the first one most people will try. And then if that doesn't work, there's other ones in that grouping of medications. Sometimes it's more about actually repopulating that good bacteria too. At the same time, we can't just kill the yeast. Sometimes we got to support some of that good bacteria that is missing. Right?
Is there like vaginal probiotics? Like, what do you do for that? Oh, really?
Probiotics. There's oral probiotics, and you wouldn't believe how much your diet plays a role in the bacteria that grows inside of you, and even vaginally. I remember being in school and learning that the microbes literally walk from your butt over because I was like, how do they get there?
No, like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, hygiene things. And so that's why your diet will also influence the type of bacteria and the diversity in the bacteria, which diversity is the key here, right?
Yeah.
If we have too much of something, you get symptoms. If you have too much good bacteria, you get symptoms. So it's just like this perfect balance. And so I'm trying to figure out, based on history, based on exam, based on talking to you, where are you off? Have you used a lot of antibiotics in the past for your acne or for whatever? And like that kind of helps me decide, okay, you probably need probiotics, some diet and fiber support. And that's how we make the plan. I would say when you have an active infection, whether it's a UTI or BV or a yeast infection, I am very much of the take your antibiotics during this acute active infection, and together we will work on you not getting another one. Mm. But in this
and
moment,
those are lifestyle considerations.
But like when people will call, I have a UTI, I don't want to go on antibiotics, can I book an appointment? And it's like, no, if you have an active infection, please take the antibiotics. We'll do a probiotic with it. We'll do other things. And then we'll try to avoid another one. But we are like,
yeah, we don't want nerve damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or what, I mean, that's a severe case, but like,
We don't want your UTI to travel to the kidneys and you end up septic.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why my appointments and my patients, we are in it. I tell them at every single patient at the first appointment, I tell them we are in this together for the long run. There's not much that happens in one appointment. Like there's lots that happens, but if we're looking for prevention, we're looking at the hard things, the things you're doing every day to make this work better long-term.
Makes sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think we've covered that's a great overview of what can happen to one's vulva. And I mean, presumably a lot of this stuff impacts the vagina as well, but I think the vulva is kind of it's been really ignored, but that's the epicenter of where most of these conditions really are problematic. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yep.
So what, for people who can't access you or, you know, have been dealing with this ongoing whatever it is, I think we've made clear that they need to get it taken care of. How would you advise them to go about being heard and taken seriously?
I think that the most important thing is to write everything down. I know most people do, but I can't tell you how helpful that is when somebody has come in and they know exactly where it hurts, exactly when it hurts, makes it worse, what makes it better. It really just helps the practitioner. And there are people who will have a focus in it. I'm pretty sure Ishwish, they have a directory online that have people who are interested in sexual health and things that are related. And even if the person is not necessarily, the goal is not penetration, let's say, these people are just more well-versed in vulvovaginal conditions. And so that might be a place to go.
To find a practitioner who has some skill, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And there's practitioners, I think, all through North America on there.
Okay. Amazing.
World.
Yeah.
And really not giving up if you feel like you're not being heard, because a lot of times people have come in and they're like, yeah, I know there's nothing there, but I feel something. And it really gets pushed on it being in your head, and patients come in feeling like I'm not going to believe them. It's almost like they really want to have to justify and make sure, but I do believe them. And there are people who believe you. And the more they know, the more they can advocate for themselves, even understanding what some of these diagnoses are. We do have access right now in 2026 to so much knowledge. And while you might not be able to diagnose yourself or run some of the tests on yourself, you can learn about these conditions.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Always so great to chat with you.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical provider.